Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Free Culture Radio, Addiction Consult Services. Hospital-based addiction consult services have been described as an emerging model of care for hospitalized patients who may have a substance use disorder. To learn more about ACS, I spoke recently with Dr. Sean Cohen, an assistant professor of medicine at the Yale School of Medicine and lead author of an article entitled Hospital-Based Methadone and Buprenorphine Initiation Practices by Addiction Consult Services, which was published August 7th in the journal JAMA Network Open. On Zoom with me now is Sean Cohen, MD, an assistant professor of medicine at the Yale School of Medicine and lead author of an article entitled Hospital-Based Methadone and Buprenorphine Initiation Practices by Addiction Consult Services, which was published August 7th in the journal JAMA Network Open. Dr. Cohen, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to talk about this and talk about all this stuff, too.
Before we get into the article, for the benefit of the listener, what are hospital-based addiction consult services? Are ACS related to SPIRT at all? I'm sorry, I'm always with the acronyms and abbreviations, me. Sudden Brief Intervention and Referral to Treatment, SPIRT for short. Love that one. Now, I'll just get back to the question. What are addiction consult services?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, and it is kind of something that's been emerging of late, at least in the United States. And so I think there's been more and more recognition that to really help people that use substances and help people that have substance use disorders or addiction, we need to give them the opportunity to access evidence-based care and just care in general wherever they are. And I think one of the really important places for people to be able to do that is in the hospital. There's really good data that the hospitalization really represents a moment where you can reach people that you might not otherwise be able to reach and help them start evidence-based treatment, engage in care, start these really life-saving medications and connect them with follow-up. And so out of that, there's kind of emerged addiction consult services. And so just like we have specialists that work in the hospital that specialize in treating heart disease or specialize in treating gastrointestinal disease, there are now specialists in the hospital that are specialty physicians, either MDs or DOs or APPs, advanced practice practitioners like APRNs and physician associates, PAs, as well as kind of a multidisciplinary team that can include social workers, peer recovery support specialists, nurses that really focus on helping people get the care that they need in the hospital, helping people access evidence-based care for their substance use disorder during hospitalization and connect them with follow-up care after the hospital too.
Right on. Now, I swear we'll get to your article in just another moment, but first, just a little more background. Again, for the benefit of the listener, could you talk a bit about opioid treatment itself, and particularly whether treatment for opioid use disorder with methadone and buprenorphine are safe, proven, and effective?
Yeah, I love going back to kind of the basics. I think the really important basics that we should all be aware of when we're trying to help people with opiate use disorder. I think it's worth always, I always like to take a step back and think about the context of the world we're living in right now, which I'm sure your listeners are probably mostly aware of and you've talked a lot about on this show before, but we are living in an overdose crisis right now, right? And even though I know a lot of the more recent news articles and stories have been about how overdoses have actually declined in the past year, there are still 80,000 people roughly that are dying of overdoses each year or in the past year. And that for me is such a big number that it kind of loses its impact, it loses its value. And so the way that kind of drives me and the way that helps me kind of frame this for myself is that someone dies of an opioid overdose roughly every 7 minutes in this country. And most of those are related to opioids and particularly to these kind of high potency synthetic opioids, which are often called fentanyl or fentanyl analogs. And so what we know is that we have incredibly effective medications with decades and decades of really robust research that treat opioid use disorder, this chronic condition where people are kind of using opioids and it's having a negative impact on their health, their function, those kinds of things. And the two most effective and most evidence-based medications for that are called methadone, which is a full opioid agonist, a long-acting full opioid agonist, and buprenorphine, which is a partial opioid agonist. Both of them have, again, really robust data, like kind of gold standard data that show that they decrease mortality for people with opioid use disorder and decrease overdose mortality by up to 50%, right? And so I think it's worth like repeating that because we really don't have medications for chronic diseases that are that effective for almost any other chronic condition, but we have these incredibly effective medications, methadone and buprenorphine, that reduce your risk of death if you have access to them and if you are offered them by 50%. And yet in this country, 20% or less of people with opiate use disorder are on these medications. And that is really multifactorial, but a lot of that is related to people, probably re related to people with opiate use disorder not having ready, low barrier access to these medications in a way that's really person-centered for them. And so kind of what that all stems from and what I brought up in the beginning is kind of with addiction consult services. One of the big kind of missions I think of a lot of addiction consult services is how do we make these medications accessible to people, particularly in the hospital when they're coming in a moment of kind of crisis related to their health or some other crisis? How do we make sure we offer them these evidence-based medications, help connect them with care, and I think help make the hospital a better and more person-centered and welcoming place for them too.
Now, finally, onto this new article, which again is entitled "Hospital-Based Methadone and Buprenorphine Initiation Practices by Addiction Consult Services, August 7th, JAMA Network Open." So, what was the question you were looking into?
So, I think there's been really relatively widespread agreement, kind of in the at least in the addiction medicine and community, that kind of we talked a little bit about high-potency synthetic opioids, which are the opioids that are now dominating the drug supply, which are also often termed like fentanyl or fentanyl analogs, fentanyl-like compounds that are different from the pharmaceutical fentanyl that we use to treat pain and things like that. But there's been relatively widespread agreement that fentanyl and fentanyl analogs, these high-potency synthetic opioids, beyond just driving overdoses, which we're seeing, are really impacting the way that people are experiencing initiation of these really evidence-based life-saving medications of methadone and buprenorphine. And there's kind of a few reasons for that is fentanyl and the fentanyl analogs, one, are so potent, right? They're so strong. One of the reasons they're driving overdoses up, but they're so potent that they just bring people's tolerances much higher than they typically were back in the days of heroin. Two, these kind of fentanyl and fentanyl analogs are lipophilic, which basically just means that they deposit in the kind of fattier tissues in your body and just hang around for much longer and can cause issues that way. And three, people often describe kind of the fentanyl and fentanyl analogs as having no legs or having like a very short duration of action. And that's actually one of the things that has led to people having to use more frequently, and we think has led to people having more complications from the use, such as like skin and soft tissue infections, deeper seated infections like infections of the heart, endocarditis, or infections of the bone, osteomyelitis. And so while we, I think, are, and I guess it's also worth saying that even though the opioid supply has changed, there is no change in the effectiveness of methadone and buprenorphine, right? The data that we have so far is still that methadone and buprenorphine are amazingly effective medications that reduce, again, I always harp on this point, I'm probably going to say it five more times, but reduce the risk of mortality, reduce the risk of overdose death by 50% for people that are on these medications. But I think what a lot of people have come to realize is that the higher tolerance that fentanyl has created in people that are using it, the lipophilicity and kind of the no legs have made it a little bit more complicated to start these medications, to start methadone and buprenorphine for a couple of reasons. And so the question that I really want to answer is, how are people starting these medications now? And how are addiction consult services specifically starting these medications? And I kind of really wanted to focus on addiction consult services because in the hospital, you have access to be able to regularly reassess people, give them medications that they might not be able to get as easily in the outpatient setting, and kind of work with people to figure out how to kind of in the most person-centered way get them onto these medications and connect them with care too.
So now, so what did you find?
Yeah, so I'll say, and I kind of break it up into methadone and buprenorphine and then some other really important findings. And so I think predominantly related to the fact that fentanyl has driven up people's opioid tolerances. And so that means that they just have a higher tolerance and maybe have withdrawal despite even higher doses of methadone or more withdrawal or more severe withdrawal than previously. A lot of people have been initiating methadone a little bit more quickly and using higher doses. Kind of in the outpatient setting, it's worth saying there are federal guidelines on kind of at least the first dose of methadone from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration or SAMHSA. In the hospital, doctors have wiggle room to be able to start and monitor more closely so they can start methadone doses at a higher level. And so what we found was that the use of kind of higher doses and more frequent increases in doses, or like a shorter interval between increases in doses for methadone, was very common in the hospital. And so most addiction consult services that we surveyed, at least, were using higher doses of methadone and increasing the dose more quickly to try to control people's withdrawal and get them to an effective dose of methadone. It's worth also, again, taking a little bit of a step back, is like an effective dose of methadone is a dose that, one, reduces your risk of overdose, but two, is a dose that controls your withdrawal symptoms and controls your cravings. And until someone gets to an effective dose, they often continue to have withdrawal symptoms, continue to have cravings, and often continue to use to kind of self-treat that. And so getting someone to an effective dose as quickly but as safely as possible is really important. And so what we showed is that at least people are more quickly trying to get people to an effective dose in the hospital. Buprenorphine is a little bit of a starting buprenorphine, I'd say, is like slightly more complicated than methadone. Methadone is a full agonist. You can just start a dose while someone is either before they go into withdrawal or while they're in withdrawal and know that it'll be okay and it'll help treat their withdrawal. Buprenorphine is a partial opioid agonist, and so it only partially activates the opioid receptor, but it's also very high affinity. It grabs that receptor very tightly, and that's what actually protects people from overdoses. But if you start it too early when someone still has opioids in their system, it can actually worsen withdrawal. And we call that precipitated opioid withdrawal or buprenorphine precipitated opioid withdrawal. And the ways that people have kind of tried to, there is a thought that fentanyl and fentanyl analogs increase the risk of buprenorphine precipitated withdrawal, mostly due to the lipophilicity because it hangs around in the body a little bit longer, even when people start to have withdrawal symptoms. And so there have been a couple of ways of initiating buprenorphine that people have tried or people have written about in mostly case reports and observational studies to try to reduce that risk of precipitated withdrawal and try to get people safely onto buprenorphine in a way that keeps them comfortable. The main two kind of alternatives are something called high dose buprenorphine initiation, where you're just using higher doses of buprenorphine earlier on, and kind of low dose buprenorphine initiation, where you're actually using really low doses of buprenorphine while using other opioids to control someone's withdrawal symptoms and kind of sneaking buprenorphine into people's systems. And we found really that, at least in the hospital, where people can get other opioids to control their withdrawal symptoms, low dose buprenorphine was used or was chosen kind of most commonly by most addiction consult services. But high dose buprenorphine and traditional buprenorphine initiations were also used. And so I think, like, overall picture that we found is that addiction consult services, like hospital-based addiction consult services, have changed or have adapted the way that they're initiating these life-saving medications in response to changes in the drug supply. And they're doing this in hopes of really helping people get onto these, again, life-saving medications in a way that is more comfortable for them, more effective for them, and hopefully keeps them in the hospital and keeps them comfortable too.
This is my conversation with Dr. Sean Cohen, an assistant professor of medicine at the Yale School of Medicine and lead author of an article entitled Hospital-Based Methadone and Buprenorphine Initiation Practices by Addiction Consult Services, which was published August 7th in the journal JAMA Network Open. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Welcome back. Now let's hear the rest of my conversation with Dr. Sean Cohen, an assistant professor of medicine at the Yale School of Medicine and lead author of an article entitled Hospital-Based Methadone and Buprenorphine Initiation Practices by Addiction Consult Services, which was published August 7th in the journal JAMA Network Open. I'm curious. Methadone, of course, is notoriously highly regulated, overregulated. It's really quite a nightmare. Buprenorphine, on the other hand, the X waiver was eliminated a couple of years ago, allowing making it easier for physicians to get people onto buprenorphine. How does that play into the initiation within the hospital? You're saying that there's a little more leeway for doctors in a hospital in terms of methadone use, but how did the regulation versus the way the two are regulated? How did that play into the initiation practices?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and what I'd say is, so the hospital, you're right, methadone is very, 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 very regulated in this country. I think unlike other countries where methadone is available for opioid use disorder, and I think I would generally agree with you that the regulation kind of outpaces the risk and that it really makes methadone outside of the hospital often difficult to access to the point where it's inaccessible for a lot of people and makes this life-saving medication not an option for some people just because of the system that it exists in, rather than it's really a magical medication that, again, saves lives. And it's a shame that the regulation leads to people not being able to access it. But those regulations that limit the use of methadone for opiate use disorder only to opioid treatment programs outside the hospital don't apply to the hospital. And so hospital-based doctors who are treating people for opioid use disorder or trying to treat their opioid withdrawal symptoms can use methadone or buprenorphine to do that in the hospital without any additional training, although they should have some familiarity with the dosing and how to safely provide it, but without any additional training or waivers or regulations or anything like that. That being said, I think in our results, we found that of the, 58 consult services, only about 80% of them offered methadone initiation, whereas all of the consult services offered buprenorphine initiation. And we didn't get into really the why of that, but I suspect it was because initiating someone on methadone in the hospital when they have no availability to get methadone outside of the hospital, if there's no opioid treatment program in the community that will continue it, is often feels a little bit more like a road to nowhere. Whereas buprenorphine, because any doctor, APP, like an APRN or a physician associate can prescribe it. Although I will say personally, not every kind of clinician will prescribe it because any clinician can prescribe it. I think it's much more available in the community for both for patients. And so doesn't affect the actual dosing or ability to use these medications in the short term in the hospital, but connecting people with care is impacted by the regulations.
So now, what are the policy implications of your findings?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to, I think what our findings show is that for me, the big things that I take away from this is that hospital-based doctors have had to adapt the way that we're initiating these medications to better serve the patients that we're seeing. And I think that same adaptation is probably happening outside the hospital. But I think there really does need to be more adaptation and quicker adaptation, to be honest. I think it's worth saying that these adaptations were done before there is like kind of our gold standard data for comparing how to initiate these medications. We know these medications are incredibly effective. Again, harping on the same thing, reduce your risk of overdose death and mortality by 50%. But we don't really know the best way to start these medications. We're just going based on lots of case reports and observational data. And I think a lot based on patient experience and what they're telling us and kind of whether they're telling us that they're still having withdrawal or not, so we can give them higher doses of things like that. But I think that adaptation really needs to continue, especially as the drug supply continues to shift, right? And so like even since we published this data and since we did this study, where we asked a couple of questions about xylazine, this new contaminant in the drug supply that is a veterinary sedative that's causing a lot of kind of complications related to wounds and things like that. We're seeing that a lot on the East Coast, in particular Philadelphia too. We're now seeing the emergence of an even newer kind of sedative in the drug supply called metatomidine that's causing even more, or likely even more severe withdrawal symptoms for people that is not an opioid, but is in the opioid supply. And so I think the big implications for me is how do we, or the thing that I'm always thinking about, and I think there are probably smarter people than me thinking about too, is like, how do we more quickly take into account the changes in the drug supply, the perspective of people who are using, who are experiencing this firsthand, and kind of use that to improve the way that we're starting these medications and helping people access these medications too.
Bringing up so many great other topics. I mean, the this new contaminant you mentioned, the new contaminant you mentioned. I mean, just in, I mean, a lot of that just speaks to the need for drug checking services and the ability for people to find out. Because a good friend of mine has said has a tagline on his show, which is, because of prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag, so please be careful. And he's right. The unregulated market, that's kind of the point of the unregulated market, that we don't know what's in that particular thing. I mean, there's nitazenes. I'm not sure. I've heard PhDs pronounce it both ways, so I feel safe mispronouncing it either way. It's another novel synthetic opioid that if you haven't started seeing it yet, you probably will soon. It's already in the rest of the world. So, and it is showing up in the U.S., as I understand.
I mean, I think the drug supply is truthfully incredibly scary. And it's worth like driving home the point of like the reason the drug supply is dangerous is because people don't know what's in it, right? Like the reason the overdose rates are so high is because we have these incredibly potent opioids and now these other contaminants that are also sedatives. And when someone goes to buy a bag of something, they have no idea what's in that bag, whether it's 1% fentanyl, 5% fentanyl, 20% fentanyl, 100% fentanyl, or fentanyl analogs, or whether there's other contaminants like xylazine or this new thing, metatomidine. And if you have a tolerance where you can only accommodate kind of 1% fentanyl and that bag is 50%, like that's what leads to an overdose. And so I think in a society where where our main goal was to decrease, and in a policy perspective, I guess where our main goal was keeping people safe and kind of decreasing overdose deaths, there's a lot more we could be doing. We could be expanding access to methadone, so it's not just available at opioid treatment programs. We could be expanding access to drug checking. We could be ensuring that people have a safer supply, like I know you've talked about on the show before too. And so there are a lot of kind of, I think, reach goals that we could be doing to decrease overdose deaths and save lives and improve people's lives that I think in the current political climate kind of seem a little out of reach.
Now, a major barrier that people who use drugs face when it comes to accessing healthcare and hospital services is stigma. And not to put too fine a point on it, but when trying to access healthcare, people who use drugs often feel discriminated against, dehumanized even. And in the current climate, with the current administration, I mean, it's just going to get worse. What can doctors and nurses, other healthcare workers working in these addiction consult services do to address the problem of stigmatization? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's such an important point to bring up, and I wish I'd mentioned it earlier, but I think honestly, one of the big goals, and I think the big impacts that an addiction consult service can have is reducing stigma. I think we know from really good qualitative data that people, like you were saying, people who use drugs are afraid of the hospital, right? They see it as a place that's like a risky place for them to be because their needs are often not met. They're often left in withdrawal. They're stigmatized. They're not offered evidence-based medications. They're not given medications for pain often because people feel like if you give an opioid to someone with an opioid use disorder, it's the worst thing you can do. And truthfully, the worst thing you can do is not treat people for why they're coming to the hospital. And I think what we see is that people with substance use disorders often present to the hospital later and kind of because they're avoiding the hospital until it's like they literally can't do anything but go to the hospital because they know they're going to have such a terrible time. And so I will say, like, I think a lot of the job of addiction consult services, and one of the reasons that I, as an addiction consult service doctor, is my predominant clinical thing that I love my job, is that I get to change the hospital and work to change the hospital. And I'm not going to pretend like the hospital I work at is perfect or any hospital is perfect, but I think it is improving. And I get to work to change the hospital to be a more less stigmatizing place by kind of getting to meet people, talking to them about what their needs are, making sure if they're in withdrawal, and most people with an opioid use disorder present to the hospital are not going to be able to use opioids in the hospital, right? So they will go into withdrawal in the hospital, that we are addressing that with effective medications, whether that's methadone and buprenorphine, often in combination with other things like clonidine and even some full agonist opioids like oxycodone to treat pain and additional withdrawal symptoms. And then really focusing on like, what are their goals and how do we help them meet them? And so I think the medical community often has this very firm focus on abstinence as the only good outcome. And I think for people who want abstinence, it is an amazing outcome and the lowest risk outcome. But there are some people who that's not in the cards for them yet. And I think understanding that and just finding a way to help someone be a little bit safer, finding a way to help someone engage with a little bit of treatment or some treatment if they're interested. And even if they're not, finding a way to help them stay in the hospital and get the care that they came to the hospital to get, whether that's treatment of an infection or treatment of something else that's going on, and help them just stay in the hospital, I think is the goal of addiction consult services. And so I think, and I will say, like, I feel like addiction consult services, I've seen the impact that they can have on other providers, knowing like, oh, this is something we can treat, this is something we can help this person with. And it kind of changes, at least for a lot of people, it changes kind of their whole outlook on how do we best help people with substance use disorders during hospitalization.
That was my conversation with Dr. Sean Cohen, an assistant professor of medicine at the Yale School of Medicine and lead author of an article entitled Hospital-Based Methadone and Buprenorphine Initiation Practices by Addiction Consult Services, which was published August 7th in the journal JAMA Network Open. And for now, that's it. You've been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Sean Cohen. Many thanks to everyone out there fighting for civil rights, human rights, and social justice. And thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. And you make it all possible. Free Culture Radio is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's audio board service. Please support public media and your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Free Culture Radio is available as a podcast or direct download. Links are at the website kboo.fm/freeculture, along with an archive of past shows. Theme music for Free Culture Radio is composed and performed by Tom Nickel in Four Dimensional Nightmare and is used with permission of the artist. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!